Chapter 3. The Wall.
I was confused at school. I didn't understand. I read report cards later that would say Lisa's tired again. I don't think I understood what the fuck I was doing there, ever. Like, no one explained to me, this is what you do, this is where you go, and why. I hated being dropped off and left anywhere. It didn't make sense to me. It was something that I really hated. So when I went to school, nobody explained. I was used to being told. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing in school. I mean, if somebody explained to me, here's what you do. This is, you're going to start here. You're going to learn lots of things, and you're going to have fun with friends and make friends. And then later in life, you can use this, and you can decide what you want to do with your life, and you can see, you know, what you're interested in, and you can study those things, and that's what's happening in life, you know? Know what you're studying. Understand why you're studying. Otherwise, everything just seemed like, what the fuck? All the time to me.
When I was about 10 years old, my mom sent me to a couple of different schools in Los Angeles. One was in Los Feliz, another was in Culver City. Our housekeeper, a wonderful black lady named Ruby, would take me to school in the morning, and on the way, she would play gospel songs, which were all I wanted to hear because that's what my father had listened to. The schools were super casual, no uniforms, not rigid like the previous bougie schools I'd been to, and I found them refreshing. I did well there because I could learn at my own pace. I could just finish an assignment and check it off, done. I didn't have to be anyone special there either. I felt no pressure at all. I don't do well in groups, work-wise, school-wise, anything-wise. So the individualized learning sang to me. The other kids, too, were really unassuming and normal. There were no clique vibes, no rich kids, no spoiled kids, no bullies, no bitches. But still, over the next few years, I started to develop a really bad attitude, and I was getting heavily into drugs. They kicked me out of the Culver City school. Scientology didn't want to fully kick me out, though, so they sent me to the Apple Scientology School in Los Feliz. They thought this new school would be more capable of handling me, but I failed everything, every fucking time. I wasn't trying to be bad. I just seriously did not give a fuck. I wore all black, dyed my hair black. I was one of those people with a fuck you, fuck authority, fuck any system, fuck teachers, fuck parents attitude. It was around this time I discovered the Pink Floyd album, The Wall. That record became all I listened to, was all I was interested in. It was my Bible and my autobiography. We don't need no education. I was always in the ethics office, which was essentially the principal's office. I can't tell you how many people I've met since who say, I met you in ethics. I joined that school on probation and never got off of it. I kept either not showing up to something like PE, which I was never a fan of, or not showing up to school at all. My mom couldn't control me. There was nothing she could do. I was not easy for her. You couldn't torture me to want to learn. I had no interest in being a good kid. So one Friday, my mom picked me up from school, drove us up to Montecito, where she had a house, and as soon as we got there, she said, pack your clothes, you're going to school in Ojai. I knew by then that she'd been thinking of putting me in a boarding school in Switzerland or on a kibbutz in Israel. I had found 4 or 5 applications to different places. I felt like my mom was always actively trying to figure out how to send me away. Beyond Switzerland and Israel, she'd mostly just dumped me off into Scientology because she thought they could handle me. Scientology kind of raised me for her. But every time she'd try to get me into a boarding school, I'd fuck with the admission test and they wouldn't take me. But now, I was on my way to be a boarder at Happy Valley School in Ojai, and I was mortified. The school was clearly designed for parents who wanted to just send their kids away. For some, it was to get a good education, sure. But for others, it was just because. I was there just because. The first thing I did when I arrived was look for who had weed. I quickly found most of the kids were of like mind and as spirited as I was, so I started to love it. We were out in the boondocks with nothing to do. I would stay with my mom in Montecito on the weekends. It was just an hour away, unless I got campused, which meant I had gotten in trouble during the week and couldn't go home. and I kept getting in trouble. So my probation kept getting extended. I would do things like not show up to class, even though we all slept about 100 feet from where their classrooms were. Sometimes there'd be a drug bust, and they'd be investigating who was involved, though it was clearly always me. I was always falling behind in my studies, lackluster. I'd been terrible at math since birth, just horrible, and I had no interest in a career or even just a subject, anything. I had no interest in being a good kid either. As I said, I just seriously did not give a fuck. I started to cycle through different phases. I was kind of a hippie chick at some point in Ojai, kind of a punk rock chick, a funk rock kid. All I wanted to do was drugs, weed and coke mainly. I wasn't addicted to one particular substance. I liked it all. I wanted to get my hands on anything I could swallow, snort, eat, sniff, you name it. I never ran into heroin, though. Never was in the same room with it, thank God. That would happen later. My main purpose in life was just to find a score. I soon settled into a heavy metal phase, dyeing my hair all black or bleaching it, and drugs. But Happy Valley didn't particularly want to throw me out either, because they knew my home life wasn't so great. The head of the Apple School would take a group of kids every summer to Spain, where she had a house, and even though I was no longer at that school, my mom made me go. The five of us kids would take care of the place, gardening, farming, and then have fun at night, hanging out at the beach and partying. Somehow, I had made it through that first year in Ojai.
When I was young, my mom would drive us to Ojai any chance she got so we could ride horses in the valley. She had a special connection to the Ojai Valley from her time there in school, and she always loved horses, knew how to connect with them, how to recognize when they were scared or irritated. But she didn't want to just trot along. She always wanted to canter and gallop. The horses represented some kind of freedom for her. I don't think she ever realized that her own mother had the same connection to horses. On the way up to Ojai, she'd listen to Michael Martin Murphy's song about the mysterious woman from Yellow Mountain and her pony, Wildfire. In fact, she listened to that song on repeat when I was a teenager. My mom had a few horses in her life she really connected to. When we lived in Hawaii, she would beg a nearby stable to let her have Misty every time she went to ride. She even wanted to take Misty home to LA with her, but the stable refused to let her go. During the COVID pandemic, she went riding in Ojai all the time. The last horse my mom ever rode was named Corona. She thought that was very funny.
By this point in my life, my mother's role was just to be a chronic stop sign. She didn't try to talk to me, hang out with me, be a friend. I was very much in love with my father's side. They were wildly colorful people, and I related to them in ways I couldn't with my mother. I know she tried her best. She was trying to figure things out and grow up too, and I gave her a genuinely hard time. I never yelled at her, never mouthed off to her, cursed at her, was never violent around her, anything like that. I was just despondent, extremely melancholy, moody, dark. I'm sure she had no idea what to do with that. When I got back from Spain, I didn't want to go back to Ojai, but I had no choice. I missed the first week, and when I finally got there, some new wild girl had arrived. She'd been waiting for me and started following me around. She said, "I've been hearing all about you." She seemed cool and interesting, but at the time I was having a thing with this German kid, but then she had sex with him and I thought, I'm done being up here. So I pretended I was all strung out on drugs to my mom. "Mom," I said, "if I stay up here, I'm gonna die." Sure enough, she took me out of Happy Valley. My mom had been dating a guy named Michael Edwards. They dated for about 6 years in all. Edwards was an actor and model, a dramatic guy with a horrible temper. He was often on drugs too. He and my mom would fight constantly, and it was physical. I'd hear her screaming. They would party a lot, go to discos, and there was a lot of cocaine around. When they'd come home from a night out, that's when I would hear him screaming, the furniture flying. It was so destabilizing. In the craziest turn of events, Edwards got a part in the movie Mommy Dearest, playing Joan Crawford's lover. One day, while he was still making the movie, my mom came into my room, went through my closet, and was yelling at me because I had wire hangers. Why are you using these? These come from the cleaners. They need to be exchanged for the nice ones, the plastic ones. As she was yelling, we could hear laughter from down the hallway. That's irony, Michael shouted. This is too crazy that you're actually yelling at your daughter about wire hangers and I'm in Mommy Dearest. My mom realized that it was crazy and started laughing too. I thought, this is my life now. You're both fucking crazy. My mom was going to put me back in the Apple school, but I was so far behind in my studies, they told her I would need daily tutoring, so I just stayed at my mom's house with Edwards. But of course, I didn't want to be there either. I didn't really want to be anywhere. I don't know what I wanted. I probably just wanted my dad. I was pulling attitude constantly, blasting heavy metal on my record player all day. One night my mom made dinner, and when I cut into the chicken, it wasn't cooked, so I said so. The next thing I know, Edwards flipped his plate so that it flew across the room and smashed into the wall. I threw my hands up as if to say, "What the fuck?" And at that, he jumped up and started screaming gibberish and ran out of the room. When he got back, he was holding the end of the cord attached to my record player. He'd cut it off with scissors. He was still yelling. Your mother cooks, and you just blast your fucking rock and roll, your fucking music, your rock and roll music. He was making no sense. Eventually, he yelled at me to get out. I was in shock. As I left the kitchen, I could hear them start to talk about me, trying to figure out what to do with me. I went looking for some cocaine. I had some hidden somewhere, but I couldn't remember where it was. The first time Edwards came into my room in the middle of the night, drunk, kneeling, was years before. I think it was 10. I woke up to find him on his knees next to my bed, running his finger up my leg under the sheets. And if I moved, he stopped. So I moved. I was awake, but I was trying to be asleep. He said he was going to teach me what was going to happen when I get older. He was putting his hand on my chest and saying, "A man's going to touch here." Then he put his hand between my legs, and he said, "They're going to touch you here." I think he gently kissed me and then left that night. I told my mom in the car the next day, and I watched her slam her foot down on the gas. At home, I ran to my room, and she flew into her room and slammed the door. Eventually, she called me in and said that Edwards wanted to apologize. Edwards was sitting on their bed looking very sullen and sulky. He said, "I'm so sorry, but in Europe, that's how they teach the kids, so that's what I was doing." I didn't know what to say. I would always feel bad for him when he apologized. Eventually, it became that he would touch me and spank me, telling me not to look. "Don't look at me," he'd say. "Don't turn your head." I assume he was jerking off. He wouldn't be mad at me. He did it very calmly, just sitting in a chair, whacking my ass. My butt would be black, blue, orange, green. It was kind of the same drill every time. He'd come in the room, do what he did. Once, I showed my mom my butt, and she said, "Well, what did you do to cause that?" As if he had just given me a spanking for misbehavior. And then she'd go scream at him. He'd say, "Oh, I was drunk," or, "She was actually flirting with me." And then she would make him come in and apologize. I would feel bad and forgive him. I was 11, 12, 13. He'd still come into my room now and then, but I would move or do something to make him think that I was waking up. Then he'd run down the hallway back to my mom's room, freak out, and stay away. At this point in my life, my mom was trying to have a career. She was trying to be a model and an actress, and she was doing commercials, so she left town quite a bit. And as crazy as this sounds, Edwards was there more than my mother. I was more used to having him around than her. Every Christmas, my mom would give me amazing gifts, but he didn't have much money to do the same, and I would always cry on Christmas Day because I felt so bad for him. He would be really hard on himself, and he played the part of pitiful victim, but he still had that terrible temper. One morning, he made some comment about how I needed to get my panties off the dryer or something. I think I said something nasty back, like, "It's not like you're not enjoying that," under my breath as I was walking out of the room. He took a dining room chair and launched it at me. It hit me in the back. It didn't hit me that hard, but it got me enough to scare the shit out of me. I was crying the whole way to school. I was crying that whole morning, and one of the teachers that I really liked saw me crying and asked me what happened. She took me aside and said, "You needed to break down and lose it," because I was such a toughie most of the time. There was a lot of violence in the house. I would hear my mom scream and cry. He'd be throwing shit. I wanted to protect her. I didn't know how. It was really bad on one of his modeling job trips to the Virgin Islands. My mom and I went with him. My mom suspected that he was having an affair with one of the models, and she recruited me to help catch him. At one point, my mom went into his room, and I could hear them going at each other. I went in there and saw him grab her and throw her on the bed. I launched across the room and jumped on his back, and he threw me on the bed too. My mom screamed, "Let's go, let's go!" We set off running down the hall, reached the elevator, and hit the button, and he was chasing us while we frantically waited for the elevator door to open, like a scene in a horror movie. Somehow, we made it back to my room, and he called her. He had turned into a puppy dog again, begging her to go back to him. When she did, I was so pissed. The next day, I left for Memphis, but I was a fucking mess.
Hearing my mother describe these incidents broke my heart. I know what happened was one of her deepest childhood traumas, but I don't think she, or any of us who knew her, fully considered how it may have contributed to some of the fundamental feelings she carried, like shame and self-hatred.
I turned 14, and my first boyfriend was a kid I went to school with. Initially, we were really mean to each other. My friends would say it was because he had a crush on me, and I would get after him too. But then, after one summer, when we got back to school, he had suddenly become handsome, and his voice was lower. He was not the little chubby, annoying prick anymore. So we dated for a year. We did everything but have sex. He was a good kid, but he had a terrible temper. My mom was doing an acting job, a movie of the week with Michael Landon in the Bahamas. I went to visit her, and there was this 23-year-old guy who had a small part in the movie too. I didn't meet him until the day before I left, and I fell hard. We walked on the beach talking the whole time, and he was really cute. I sat with him while he was packing. I was really sad. Then he kissed me, and we left the islands. I remember listening to that song, Torn Between Two Lovers, on the plane ride home over and over and over because I still had my boyfriend back in LA who I'd been dating for a year. When I got home, I broke up with him. I used to call the 23-year-old and just be silent. So he got used to this silent caller. He didn't know it was me. There was no caller ID or anything then. The first time he said, "Hello? Who is this?" "Hello? Hello?" Annoyed. Next time he said, "It's you again." Then finally I was punching the numbers to answer yes or no to his questions. "Have we met?" "Beep." "Do we know each other?" "Boop." Then he figured it out. I was so nerve-wracked. The guy was understandably, horribly apprehensive about seeing me, and I didn't know how I was going to pull off actually meeting up with him. One day at school, I told my teachers that I had to go to the dentist, and he picked me up a block or two away. We walked around Beverly Hills all day. I didn't care what we were doing. I didn't care where we were. I didn't care about anything. I just wanted to be with him. He gave me his ring at the end of it. Then he dropped me off right before I was due back to school. I was gone. Really, really gone. My mom found out and I was grounded, banned from speaking to him or contacting him, which, of course, didn't work. Not that I wouldn't have done the same thing if I was her, believe me, but I was not going to be stopped. I was completely, madly in love. After that, there was a lot of sneaking around with him. At some point, my mom said I could see him, but we weren't supposed to be alone. We would have to be somewhere my mom knew about and could see. He could come over and hang out, or I could invite him to go somewhere that my mom was also going to be, and he became friends with Edwards, of course. He was a 23-year-old being chaperoned by someone's mom. But it was also history repeating itself. My mom was 14 when she met my dad. I was replaying her life in a weird way. But she and my dad waited until she was 18 to have sex. I was 14 when I lost my virginity to this guy. When I saw him, all I wanted to do was have sex or make out It was all I could think about. We would find a place to go or be in his car in a parking lot. I'd tell my mom that I'd meet her somewhere, that we were going to just walk around, and then we'd find somewhere to go and make out. But he was a total womanizer. He'd been with everybody. He was that guy in high school, that guy on the set, that guy. Women of all ages were in love with this motherfucker, and it was so easy for him to keep up his regular life, his other women, because I couldn't see him that often, and even when I could, it was only for a short time. When I met people later who knew him, who went to school with him, they would tell me about a van he had that girls would go into every break, lunch, whatever recess they had. He was a complete and utter player. And even more, every woman was in love with him. It was crazy. My mother knew a woman at the time who was a Playboy bunny. When I started dating this guy, the Playboy bunny was already having an affair with him, and my mom told me that this woman was trying to get my mother to send me off to that kibbutz in Israel to get me out of the way. I was with him for 2.5 years. The ending was just a nightmare. He took me to a park and had his friend secretly take pictures of us. They sold the story, got paid for the photos. He didn't care about me. It was just an opportunity to him. Ours was an illegal relationship, and selling those photos outed him. But the media at that time didn't care that I was underage and just advertised this personal information. I didn't know he'd set up the photo shoot. He later denied it, but my mom told me it was him. When I found out, I swallowed 20 Valium. But I also made sure that somebody saw me. I wasn't that serious about my suicide attempt. I went to the local hospital and they gave me Ipecac to make me throw up, and that was the end of that. But I was really devastated. That was my first big love and first big betrayal. I wasn't going to be happy until I got some revenge. My mom came up with a plan. She didn't want to tell me the details because I was still kind of talking to the guy sometimes. But he was dealing blow, I think, so it was arranged that there would be a drug bust by some off-duty cops. She wanted him humiliated in the process. She told me they did an anal probe.
The first time my mom told me about this betrayal, she said it was her first memory of feeling used. The first time she realized people had an agenda with her. She talked about it regularly throughout her life. It was a core trauma for her. It was just one of a series of events from her childhood that came together to build a foundation of distrust in people. A distrust that she never really got past.
I went back to school, but as soon as they put an algebra book in front of me, I was out of there. I didn't understand why I was there in the first place. No one asked me what I was interested in. If you're going to put a kid in school for all those years, at least find out what the kid's interested in. No one ever told me why I was even in school. I remember reading my report cards, and from the time I was little, all they ever said was that I was really, really tired and that I hated PE and that I was forlorn. Actually, everyone who saw me after I was 9, after my dad died, said that I looked so sad. My mom made me live with her again, but again, I was miserable, so I was a terror. It was clear she didn't want me there. She tried to make me go to other boarding schools, but it never worked out. So in the middle of the night, she made me pack my bags and she took me to the Scientology Celebrity Center and dropped me off. The woman who ran the place took me to a tiny room on the 3rd floor. I was just glad to be out of my mom's house. The first morning, I removed the large mirror from the wall, called my Coke dealer, and invited him and about 6 or 7 other people over. We proceeded to have a 4-day bender in that room. I woke up at one point and everyone was asleep. I had a moment where I was just done. I yelled, "Everyone wake up, get the fuck out, get out." I took all the rest of the blow and flushed it down the toilet. I went down to where they audit people and I was shaking, sweating, crying. "Help me," I said, though I could barely speak. They moved me to a really nice room on the 6th floor. It was a luxury palace with a kitchen and a dining room and everything. They made me promise to behave myself and study, create, actually do shit. For some reason, it worked. For the next few months, I actually started to do really well. Then my mother tried to make me move back into her house, And that's when fucking DEFCON 3 started. It was Christmas. For whatever reason, I had to go with her and Edwards to Pensacola, Florida, where his daughter lived. She and I were supposed to stay home, and we pretended we had, but we actually went out. We didn't do any drugs. I think maybe we tried to drink, but the point was that I had lied. My mom and Edwards showed up at her house. I saw my mother get out of the car, and I took off running down the street with my mother chasing me. I'm flying. My mom is screaming at me, but she can't catch me. In the end, I got in her car. She's in the front seat, I'm in the back, and she's screaming at me because I'm dodging her attempts to hit me. Edwards was trying to get her off of me. I'm punching myself in the face, trying to make it look really dramatic so it would seem like she did it. The next day, we flew back to LA, and she would not let me out of her sight. During the layover, I was trying desperately to get a phone call to the Celebrity Center for help, but my mom wouldn't even let me go to the bathroom without her. Back in LA, my mom was walking me through the lobby of the Celebrity Center to go get some of my stuff from my room, and it felt like somebody had a gun to my back. As we walked, I looked at some guy I kind of knew. I'll never forget that he had a black leather jacket, boxers, and black boots, and my eyes got big, and I tried to mouth, "Help me." My mom got me home that night, and heavy negotiations started the next day. She agreed to let me go back to the Celebrity Center, but I would have to go to their Narcanon office and enter their rehab. "Give me a minute," I said. I went and called the father of a friend of mine and asked him what to do. He told me to ask for 24 hours to think about it, which I did. And the next day, I told the rehab that I seemed to have three options: live with my mom and Edwards, go to Narcanon, or hit the streets. I told them I chose the third option. "Hold on, hold on," they said. The negotiations continued, this time at a nearby Jack in the Box. And I told them I wanted to live back in the room I'd had there with my freedom, and that I'd do whatever, reading, studying, but that all I cared about was living at the Celebrity Center in my room. They eventually agreed. So I went. And soon enough, I was passed out drunk in front of my room. And then they actually came up with a great idea. They made me take care of somebody who came in legitimately addicted to drugs. They gave me a car so I could drive her around, help her with life. I became really close with that girl, really took her under my wing. She was a young mom addicted to heroin. Her husband and kids didn't even know. I really thrived taking care of her, helping somebody else. So now I essentially had my own apartment in the Celebrity Center and made a lot of friends there. And I would still occasionally hook up with the older guy who sold the photos of me. I remember he was living with a woman. I don't know if he married her. But one afternoon, I met him at their place and we had sex when she was gone. The guy wanted to meet up with me more, wanted to have more of a relationship with me. But by that point, I had met and fallen in love with a guy named Danny Keough.
The other thing is I don't do well in mediocrity. It's not in my makeup either. I don't particularly like it. I don't like things to be crazy, but I don't do well with just like, I just had a hard time as a kid just like looking at people that just would go to work for a few hours a day, come home and have dinner and talk about their lunch hour or their lunch break or their mundane conversations they have and things that interested them. I don't fucking understand that. To this day, I will start clawing at my leg if I have to like sit and listen to something mundane. It actually kills my spirit a little, like my soul. It just really like, God,